Thank you. Welcome. Namaste. Namaskaram. Hare Krishna. Today is the 4th of May, 2016. One of the things that's happening astrologically right now, which has been having some effect, but not nearly as dramatically as I would have thought, is that Saturn and Mars are together in Scorpio, and they're going to be there for a long time. It's like from February till June. Mars moves retrograde out of Scorpio backwards into Libra within that time period, then goes forward again into Scorpio, but it's pretty much from February to June. I think it ends on the 17th of June.
Scorpio, would it not mean that it's hidden? It might take longer for its surface?
Yeah, it's possible. Saturn and Mars, when they come together, are generally, they can become very dangerous and huge troublemakers. And when they go into retrograde motion through the sky, then that creates the potential of the danger, and it lifts it to a much higher degree. We were talking about this a few minutes ago. What I can remember, I don't see a lot of, there have been like three natural disasters I can think about. There were two earthquakes. Were there two in Colombia? Was it Colombia or Ecuador? Ecuador. And then there was another one in Japan recently. But apart from the wars that are going on, and there's a few of those, but they're just kind of going on. I mean, they've been going on for a long time. I heard one report on the radio today that an entire town in Alberta, in Canada, has been evacuated today, 80,000 people, because of wildfires burning. That'd be way up in the north of Alberta, where the tree line would be, I assume.
Tar sands, isn't it?
Hmm?
You know, the tar sands, the oil they extract through, it's in Alberta,
I think. Mm-hmm.
Or around there.
Yeah.
So it'd be very dangerous if...
Yeah, no, I didn't investigate it, but yeah, I mean, if that catches on fire, then it's almost impossible to put that out. But they just described it as a wildfire, so I'm not sure. Anyway, we haven't seen too much of anything significant. Did you say there was an earthquake today?
No.
Kalindi?
I don't know. No, I dreamed that.
Oh, you had a dream, no, was it? Sorry. She had a dream there was going to be a tsunami in Japan. Don't know. Maybe it won't come true. We can hope. Okay. Economy, which we spoke about at the beginning of the year, hasn't recovered. It's been up and down. They're still trying to pretend that there's not a problem. So they do all kinds of these governments and big banks and economies. They try to do things to make everything look like it's good. You know, they put band-aids on things. Anyway, we'll see what happens, how that all unfolds. I was going to tell you, one of my friends that I met in India, Jagannath Rao, we met him in Vrindavan, a very nice Krishna devotee. He posted this the other day, and thought it's really interesting, so I'm going to share it with you. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the pastimes of Krishna while he was on earth, but it's not only that, it's actually many historical stories from the Vedas that are included within that book. There are seven mothers. In the Vedic understanding, it is considered that there are seven mothers. Do you know what they are? Anybody? Well, there's an obvious one.
Your own mother, Mother Earth.
Your own mother.
Mother Cow.
Mother Earth. The cow. That's three. You got a half. The wife of the spiritual master, the wife of a Brahmin, of a priest, the wife of the king. The king is the father. He's the father that's to look after everybody in the country, in the sovereign state, in the national boundary. So therefore, by definition, his wife is the mother. So she is one of the seven mothers. Also, if you have a stepmother or a foster mother, she's also considered to be mother. But that she's not one of the ones listed. The last one is the nurse, and that would be the wet nurse, or your nanny, if you had one, because the wet nurse is breastfeeding you when you're a child, or the nanny looks after you, you know, if people who have a nanny. So that's the seven mothers. The interesting one here, for our purposes, is the cow. Of course, in India, the cow is considered to be sacred. And there's even an expression that's been there since I was a child. It's still there. Holy cow. I think Bart Simpson says that, doesn't he? Isn't that one of his big ones? Holy cow. Why is the cow holy? Well, the cow is very, very different from many animals. So that's what we're going to read here in a minute. The cow is considered to be the mother because, ideally, when you come out of the womb, the best milk, the best food, initial food, is breast milk. I mean, it's hands down. And you get... it strengthens the immune system, it wards off disease. There's so many different things that breast milk provides. You're supposed to, according to the Vedic tradition, supposed to keep the child on the breast up to 5 years old, which is revolutionary in modern day. 5 years old, well, it's not like the child's breastfeeding like a baby, but the child can breastfeed up to five if they want to.
I have a friend like that,
and
she calls herself Daisy
Cat. Her child still breastfeeds. Holds the child.
Four?
Yeah. And it's a fact that they're far more well-adjusted and far more fearless and far more, you know, comfortable in themselves the longer, because they have that stability and stable connection from the mother. You know, I mean, there would be examples of the opposite of that. A child who's too needy and clingy, that's a different thing than what we're talking about here. But I know anybody who's going to be listening, this is going to say, yeah, but. So I covered that. Anyway, the best food source for a child who's off the breast is cow's milk. Now, there's a lot said about cow's milk because cow's milk is best taken raw. Organic cow's milk. In Los Angeles, we used to be able to buy organic raw cow's milk, raw milk. In the supermarket. It was pasteurized. They couldn't sell it without it being pasteurized. but it was raw. It wasn't treated with a lot of the chemicals or additives or whatever they put in it. I don't know what it all is. The problem with cow's milk nowadays, and people, people becoming lactose intolerant, is very much a symptom of the age in which we live.
From an Ayurvedic point of view, milk becomes poisonous once it's boiled. And to pasteurize milk, all milk is pasteurized.
Yeah.
And mostly homogenized too. So they're all boiled, which means now you've got a whole generation of people that are all allergic to milk because it's become poisonous. Because it's been boiled.
If it wasn't boiled,
yeah, you might run the risk of getting a bacterial infection from the milk, but it would be poisonous.
Yeah. It's like honey, too. Honey's not supposed to be boiled, you know, in Ayurveda. You can buy raw honey here, you know, but the stuff they got in supermarket shelves is all boiled. That means they import it, they boil it, put it in a jar. So they mess with it too much. And then they add stuff to it. But cow's milk, in its traditional form, the way it's meant to be, is the best thing for babies. The other thing is milk is not supposed to be drunk cold. It's supposed to be drunk warm, heated. Like it comes out of the udder, comes out warm. So here's the information. A study was done. Well, one study was done, but this is part of the study. But the rest of it is common knowledge around. The Vedic tradition regarding the cow and why the cow is so important and so sacred. It's said in the Vedic tradition that if you're going to eat meat, you can eat meat, but don't eat the cow. That's the one animal you avoid, because that's essentially eating the mother. Cow is, people think cow is just like an ordinary animal, of no greater value than a chicken or a goat. Then why is it revered, and why should we not kill and eat it? The cow is an animal, but it has many specialties that no other animal, in fact, not even human beings, have in this world. This is the reason that in the Vedic tradition, the cow is considered to be the mother. And people pray to the cow or show respect to the cow, calling it Go Mata. Go means cow. The root word of the Sanskrit go is gau. So gau to cow is fairly close. It's gau, and then it becomes go. Krishna is known as Govinda, one who gives pleasure to the cows. Or Gopi Nath. Gopi are the cowherd maidens, and Nath means the Lord of the cowherd maidens. But again, the word go is in there. If a cow eats something poisonous by mistake and we drink its milk, do we fall ill? To find out, one cow was regularly fed a particular quantity of poison every day. After 24 hours, its blood, urine, dung, and milk were tested in a lab to check if it was poisonous or where the poison could be found. In this way, the tests were carried out for continuously with this cow for 90 days. At the All India Institute of Medical Sciences. The researcher found no trace of poison in the milk, blood, urine, or dung of the cow. Then where did this poison go? Just like the story of Lord Shiva drinking the poison from the ocean of milk in one of the pastimes when they were churning the ocean of milk, Shiva held the poison in his throat. That's why Shiva is known as Nila, Nilakanta, the blue-throated one. Nila means blue. The cow hid the entire poison also in her throat. It didn't go into her body, according to the experiment. The cow is the only creature that inhales oxygen and exhales oxygen instead of carbon dioxide. Cow milk has the quality of counteracting poison. When I was, seven, I had a dog, same as Butch, little guy. And he had eaten some rat poison out in the back lane behind the house. And he was in trauma. And I brought him into the house, and my mother said, we feed him milk. And so she grew up on a farm, so she knew you feed milk to counteract poison, which I only remembered it today when I read this, I think in my flashback, you know. Well, the problem was that milk went into his lungs and didn't go into his belly, so he suffocated from the milk. But she had good intentions, God bless her. There are diseases that medical science has not yet understood. Cow urine has the power to cure them. When we go to India, sometimes to Vrindavan and to Mayapur, where they keep a lot of cows, and the cows are treated kind of in the old way, in the old ways, and they're very they're treated very personally. They're not hooked up to machines. Everything's done by hand, and when you go visit the cows, it's a whole different energy around them, and they're real loving. Anyway, they take the cow dung and the cow urine, and they make Ayurvedic medicines from them. You can buy them there. They sell them there. He says something about that further as we go here. If cow ghee, which is clarified butter made from butter from the cow, if cow ghee and rice are cooked together, two powerful gases called ethylene oxide and propylene oxide are released. Propylene oxide is the best gas used for creating artificial rain. Makes it rain. Cow urine is the world's best killer of microbes. With medicines made using cow dung and cow urine, stomach-related ailments can be cured. We can save ourselves from radio waves by plastering the home floors and area outside the home with cow dung. Which, this sounds outrageous to most people, but it would be commonly done in India back in the day. In fact, if you were going to set up a sacred mandala outside, a mandap, to do a fire ceremony, a sacred fire ceremony, and offer the ghee into the fire with mantra, etc., you would have to first either plow the field or clear it of all debris with your area, and then it would be sprinkled with cow dung and cow urine to purify, because it's antiseptic. So it counteracts radio waves. Cow dung has the power to destroy microbes causing cholera. If you take 10 grams of cow ghee and you offer it into the fire while you're doing the yajna, sacred fire ceremony, 1 ton of oxygen is generated. 10 grams of cow ghee generates 1 ton of oxygen. So anyway, that's what it says.
Did you say 10 grams?
Yeah,
nothing. 10 grams. The last time we had.
Yeah, it says 10 grams of cow ghee.
You talk about carbon trading, so don't you?
Yeah, just go outside with an old oil barrel, take the top off it, stir the fire, just keep lashing the ghee into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, where we are here, I don't think we're lacking too much oxygen and pure, clean air. We have a lot here. Because, lichen grows on the east side? West side?
Lichen grows all over. The moss that always grows on the north side.
Moss grows on the north side.
There's a big problem in a lot of major cities now. What? The quality of the air.
Oh, yeah.
Even European cities, much less in Asia.
Oh, yeah.
Paris.
You got chlorofluorocarbons coming out of
Hugo
exhaust fumes.
It's called the Champs-Élysées. I remember when we were there maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
All the trees down either side were this burnt, yellowy brown.
Yeah.
And I remember the taxi driver telling us that it was the pollution.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look at Japan. They walk around with surgical masks on. I saw a Japanese flight come in wherever I was recently. I was in London, in Heathrow. So a Japanese flight come in, and all the Japanese people get up. They're all wearing these masks. You know.
Someone is bottling oxygen from their hair from some air filter and selling it. They buy capsules of oxygen.
Yeah, you think it's ridiculous they're buying oxygen. Well, yeah. We buy a bottle of water. That's just as ridiculous. I mean, there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
But, you know, why... You know, if you step back and take a look, why do you have to buy bottled water? What is wrong? What is inherently wrong with what's going on, you know? Okay. I'm just going to get into some meditation. I wanted to do that. We'll just hold on. Anybody have any questions, comments, anything you want to discuss? No.
Well, they consider the cow to be a great polluter because
it
produces methane. I've never heard of it
producing
methane. It's
getting back to me. Yeah, and they say it produces methane.
Oxygen.
Yeah. You see, what they're doing is they're cutting down forests, like in Brazil, they're cutting down the rainforest. For different reasons, largely they cut it down to create pasturing grounds. So you can have very, very large herds of animals, particularly cows. Because they butcher cows for the beef. It takes an acre of land to produce one hamburger. An acre of land. So if you were to take an acre of land and plant a crop on it, like wheat or corn or rice or whatever, how many people would it feed? As opposed to 1 acre for a hamburger at McDonald's or wherever else. So in the natural way, there aren't unmanageable herds of large amounts of cows. It would never be done like that. They used to have this statement that carnation, milk from contented cows. That was their tagline when I was a kid. And cows would, you know, you'd see a big, huge pasture and a handful of cows. out there grazing. You know, it wouldn't be wall-to-wall herds. We saw in California on the I-5 corridor.
That's the thing to hell. I didn't understand what the stench was.
We were coming down from Central California back to L.A., from San Francisco to L.A., and we went through Hanford. But as we went and got there, I said, what is that smell? And we were looking at each other, and we couldn't put our finger on it, because usually you recognize a bad smell, and you say, oh, it smells like. And we didn't know. And next thing you know, and this is like...
This is desert.
California is desert. There's parts of California that are not desert, that are mountains and forests and stuff. But this, a lot of California is desert. So there were thousands and thousands of cows all crammed in together. There wasn't a stitch of one iota of grass anywhere. It was just dirt, dust. And they were in these huge, were they in corrals or were they in, I can't remember now.
As far as the eye could see.
You know, and these are beef cattle. There's a huge difference between beef cattle and dairy cattle. I mean, just look at their faces. You can see instantly. Beef cows are very different than dairy cows. Dairy cows, they're present. And they got the soft, gentle kind of energy, whereas beef cows are kind of really dull and dense and I don't know, they're just different. It's kind of obvious. These are beef cows. So if you had cows in their natural state, I mean, yeah, maybe they produce methane, but if you have that many of them, then yeah, it would become a problem. And they're cutting down the rainforest, and that's creating all kinds of problems, so they can create pasture land.
To be fair, you know, a lot of those cows are on corn diets.
Yeah, they're on corn diets.
They're not on a natural diet. Actually destroyed the stomach. What's the documentary about it?
Yeah.
They're not meant to be eating corn.
No, they're not meant to be eating corn. You know, they even advertise it. Corn-fed beef. It says corn-fed beef. That's what you want. That's how they say it, too. You know, they just break all the rules, all the laws, and then they say, we got this problem with methane. Yeah. You got a problem with the chlorofluorocarbons, too, because of the combustion, you know, petrol combustion engine. You know. In 1956, the anti-gravitics, how does it go?
Gravity.
Yeah, anti-gravitics propulsion. Anti-gravitics magnetic propulsion techniques or methods were discovered. 1956. And who uses widely anti-gravitic magnetic propulsion? Flying saucers. They hover and then they go whoosh, whoosh. That's it. That technology is available here on Earth since 1956. But there's no money in it.
I'm drain the oil first.
It's no money. It's tire manufacturers, the car manufacturer. Well, you still have cars, but you're some kind of vehicle.
Can't extort if you prefer.
You can't extort. You know, it's just like Tesla. Tesla invented the direct current, which you could pull from the ethers, free of charge. And Edison came in and invented the alternating current, and they declared Tesla to be a madman, shut him down, and he died He died in a cheap apartment in the middle of a city years later. They just they took away his value, just declared him mad. Because there was no money. They couldn't make money on it. Which leads us to? I guess it does. I didn't know
the original madman?
The divine and demoniac natures. Oh. The original madman. So this is chapter 16 of the Bhagavad Gita. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. When Krishna spoke to Arjuna on the battlefield, this is what he said. Fearlessness, he's enumerating the divine qualities, the qualities that belong to godly persons, endowed with the divine nature. They're extensive. Fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity and simplicity, nonviolence, ahimsa, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault finding.
I so far can't take any of those boxes.
not easy to do. Compassion and freedom from covetousness. Gentleness, modesty, and steady determination. Vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, freedom from envy, and the passion for honor. These are the transcendental qualities belonging to godly persons. So, I'm sure you have several of them. And in the next verse he says, these are the ones that belong to those of demonic nature or dark nature. They're pretty short. arrogance, pride, anger, conceit, harshness, and ignorance. The transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas the demoniac qualities are conducive to bondage. So what does that mean? Bondage means repeated birth and death. That's bondage. Liberation means getting off the wheel of repeated birth and death. So if you cultivate the transcendental qualities or the good qualities, then the chances are you have a better chance of getting off the wheel of repeated birth and death. In this world, there are two kinds of created beings. One is called the divine and the other the demoniac. I've already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear further of the demoniac. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done, what is not to be done. Well, you could say that can happen with lots of people. That's like the state of confusion. That's quite common.
It's not meant by moral code.
No. Yeah, it does. It means by moral code. I was sort of telling the joke. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. They say that the world is unreal, that there is no foundation, and that there is no God in control. It is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Well, that's what we were talking about 5 minutes ago. Unbeneficial, horrible works that are designed to destroy the world. But in the meantime, we look at all this money we make. So, the demoniac, taking shelter of insatiable lust, pride, and false prestige, and thus being illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. They believe that to gratify the senses unto the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization. The prime necessity of human civilization is to enjoy yourself. That's the belief with most people. Enjoyment is part of being on the planet. It's part of being human. There is an amount of enjoyment that is there. But that's not what everything is meant for every day, all day long. Thus there is no end to their anxiety, being bound by hundreds and thousands of desires. By lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. Again, that's what we said. They'll do anything to make money, and profit is the main goal. One of the things that's very common nowadays is with Wall Street people, hedge fund people, people who do financial speculation. It's one thing to invest. I'm not criticizing people who make investments. But people who are trying to work the financial markets so they can short them or they have, I don't know all the financial terms that they use, to make, it's a bubble on a bubble, and they have so many ways of selling and repackaging loans and debts and somehow squeezing some money out of it, yet nothing is produced. That's the point. It's just about profit, and no goods or services are actually produced. So that is an example of demoniac behavior. So what, all this effort, what has it produced? Well, look at my bank account. I've got 10 times as much as I had last year. But what has it produced in the world? What's the value, all the time and effort? How has that helped the world as well as yourself? Didn't help them. So there's no dharma involved. And dharma means duty and obligation and doing things for the right reasons, fulfilling yourself, acting in accordance with your nature, and making contribution. The demoniac person thinks, Ishvaro ham hambogi, siddho ham balavan suki. He thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. Says right, Bhagavad Gita. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future, more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him. My other enemy also will be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. And in this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So, that's the mentality of the demoniac. Do you know anybody like that? Not personally, or personally?
I really think it makes a big difference. The industry people are working in.
Yeah.
The industry and what they're producing.
Yeah.
What they're buying and selling.
Exactly.
I think that's a bigger attractor. Some people would be more egocentric or power hungry in some businesses.
And
that
they
business
just know.
Facilitates that.
Okay.
Whereas in the more businesses that are genuinely trying to help people, are going to produce something that's of value, will attract the people who are on the same wavelength.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, then you look at what is the activity, or what is it they're producing? What mode is it in? Is it in the mode of goodness? Is it in the mode of passion? Is it in the mode of ignorance? And that's also going to contribute a lot to the mentality of what they do, how they behave.
Brahaspati Samyutti, and he talks about thrift and economy, and he says one thing you never do, you never cut down a tree that can bear fruit just to get its fruits. You know, something's producing fruit and has value, you don't cut it down to get the fruit, you just pick the fruit.
Mm.
I think there's a lot of industries out there now that are just cutting all the trees down. They're not using it for wood or something, they're not even looking at the fruits that come from it.
No, that's what we're saying with the rainforest, they're just decimating. Don't we do some meditation tonight? I got some good ones here that I put together a long time ago, and I just sort of pulled them out. Close your eyes. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Breathe and let go. Allow the stress, the tension, the fear, the apprehension to drain from your body. Relax. Okay. We're going to do a persona meditation. You've invited your parents over for dinner, or one of your parents, if you like. The doorbell rings. The knock comes on the door. But before you answer the door, do you decide to answer the door as yourself, the way you are normally? Or do you enter the closet and choose a mask, or a mask and a costume to put on first before you answer the door? If you decide to put on a mask, go to your closet now and select the mask. Now, you don't pick this. Let your subconscious show it to you. You don't choose it. Let your subconscious choose it for you. Open your closet door and choose the mask you're going to wear to greet your parent or parents. Okay. Now, has everybody done that? All right. Open your eyes. Return to consciousness. Did anybody answer the door just the way they are, without taking on a mask or a costume? filled it. Did anybody take on a mask or costume? William?
Yeah.
What did you take on?
The mask was my father's face.
The mask was your father's face?
Yeah.
And who were you greeting?
My father.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
Well, I suppose I don't want to show myself.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So why did you choose your father's face? So you would look exactly like he wants you to be?
Yeah.
Because he'd be happiest if you were a spitting image of him somehow or other. Play him at his own game. Okay, good. Antoinette?
I was in conflict about wearing a mask. I really had a strong sense, as you are. And then I was imagining myself going to the closet. And I was thinking, would I wear the mask of a clown? Why would I do that? Would I wear the mask of someone like Marie Antoinette? Why would I do that? So I was still undecided.
Okay, I didn't give you enough time, huh?
But interesting, before you began, before you said parents, I was already imagining my parents with me, my mum and my dad.
There you go.
I turned into a red squirrel.
Red squirrel?
Yeah, before you even told me to go to the closet. And I lifted up my head out of the letterbox to check to see who it was.
So what does that mean for you?
I was hiding away. I don't know.
Yeah, she took on a whole other body. Never mind a mask and a costume. She turned into a red squirrel. You could make a fast getaway up the tree, no? Okay. That was a good one. All right. Close your eyes. Now, don't, if you're going to choose a mask, don't choose it. Let your subconscious show you. You get up early in the morning to go to work. Before you leave the house, do you decide to go as yourself, or do you enter the closet and choose a mask or a costume to wear? If so, what mask or costume do you put on? I'll give you a little more time to rummage around in the closet this time. Everybody got it? Okay. Open your eyes. Close your eyes. Breathe, relax, let go. Clear your mind. Clear your mind. A monk in a hooded robe, a cowled robe, appears. No part of the monk's body can be seen, nor his face or her face. You cannot see. You just see the body and in this a robe and a cowl. This person is a very important teacher for you in this lifetime, a guru figure. The monk explains how difficult it was to play this role in your life, how at times it seemed such a thankless task. mentions how you became frustrated or angry so many times. Finally, the monk removes the cowl and you see who it is. Who is it? Seen it right away when I say, who is it? Do you all see it? The guru figure? No. Antoinette?
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ? Okay. Did he say anything to you when he revealed himself?
Nope.
I was on a, sort of like a very, very thin ledge with lots of little tiny stones way up on the side of a mountain. And as it walked towards me, it shifted between being a Buddhist monk, you, and a woman. It was a bit like I got all three of those things. And then, as you looked down off to one side off the ledge, it was this just vast, vast valley like you'd see in Tibet. And it was sort of symbolic that. I wasn't receptive in listening to the teaching, and the landscape was sort of, I don't know, symbolic of that. And then towards the end, here, I looked off, and there was like a big eagle flying above the valley, and then the cloak dropped off you, a big bird came out of you, you turned into an eagle, and there was some sort of sky burial going on. Then, when you said, okay, are you finished? You physically there, you were standing like this, you were there like doing this.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I was doing that.
No way, it's amazing.
I was expanding my wings.
Sure. I think in Tibet they do sky burials, don't they? Of some sort. It had something to do with not quite a sky burial, but it was symbolic of a.
Well, they would.
It wasn't a vulture, though.
Yeah, and they would leave the vulture to pick the carcass clean.
These were more eagle. Yeah. She turned into one and flew off.
Well, there you go. Works for me. Okay. Well, we'll leave it there.